This is Andrew Bellison, the voice of Wrigley Field, and you're listening to the Ivy Envy Podcast.
Hi, and thanks for downloading this episode of the Ivy Envy Podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Corey, and I am joined by the other two hosts of this podcast through a Google Plus Hangout.
Hi.
Andy forgot how to podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, hi, this is Andy. Sorry. I'm
really nervous.
I just remembered how to do it.
And this is Kurt. Holding it down once again.
Right.
Now I have to carry Andy's dead weight too.
Nice to have you back, Andy.
Hey, thanks. It's nice to be back.
How'd the move go?
Missed you guys. It was pretty good overall. My box springs didn't fit up the stairs, you know, stuff like that. So I had to saw my box spring in half, basically. That was pretty cool.
Ooh, did you do the trick where you saw it and fold it?
Yep, I did.
Nice.
Yeah.
Saw that on YouTube once.
It's pretty cool.
Still no internet at the new place?
Nope, but it's supposedly going to be there starting tomorrow.
Nice. On the midweek episode, I don't know if you listened, Andy, but Kurt and I kind of got into a little bit whether or not we could live without the internet. What's it like? Wow. What's it like, Andy?
Well, I'll tell you what. I've been reading more books, so I think it's not necessarily a bad thing. But, actually, I haven't listened to the last two episodes because, like, we're at the max on our data also. It's like I haven't even been able to...
You can't even use your phone.
No, not really. I haven't been able to download podcasts or stream anything. So,
go to McDonald's and use their free Wi-Fi.
Well, listening to the podcast would actually cost about $45
because you go over your data. That was expensive. But see, I'm recording from my in-laws' house tonight, and I just downloaded a bunch of podcasts, including the last two episodes of the Ivy Envy Podcast.
Wow. What a dedicated listener that guy is.
I don't remember what I said about you, but it's water under the bridge.
But that's the thing. It's not, it's time delayed, so... It's not water under the bridge. It's going to be water coming straight for my bridge when I listen to it.
We're going to have to relive it all again. I was pretty angry, so I'm better now.
All right. Well, I'll keep that in mind.
Okay.
All right. So obviously we have a lot of fun Cubs topics to get to, but in less than a week, we will all three of us be in the same place again. Seems like we were just all in the same place. But for the third annual weekend at the lake, and I think I'll let you guys describe the weekend, but I do want to say this about it. The purpose of this weekend is twofold. Number one, we want an excuse to hang out with each other since we all live in separate areas now. And the other purpose is to hang out with you, the listeners. You listen to us. Many of you listen to us as often as twice a week. And I think you feel like you know us. You get to know our personalities. And I think because of the format of this podcast, I think many of you feel like you're hanging out with friends when you listen to us. So these Ivy Envy opportunities, those are to really opportunities for us to hang out with you and get to know you. And, you can only get to know people so well through interacting on Facebook and Twitter and stuff. So we want to hang out, drink a few beers, and just talk about the Cubs with you. It's at our place. We have camping. And if that's not your thing, there's couches and floor space and everything. We're about 3 hours southwest of Chicago, right in between Peoria and the Quad Cities. Amtrak goes from Chicago into our town. I think it's like maybe $30 round trip to take Amtrak from Galesburg to Chicago and back. I've had people email and ask about cost for the weekend. There is no cost. So I'll provide food Friday night, Saturday morning, and Saturday lunch. We'll probably eat in town Saturday night. It's pretty cheap around you know, if we're hanging out at Duffy's and watching the Cubs, it's cheap to drink, and that's not an exaggeration. And so, yeah, this is not like, yeah, there's no cost. This is not a fundraiser for IVNV. We really just want to hang out with you. So that's my pitch. So you guys can go ahead and describe the weekend.
Oh, man. Well, I think we start with Friday night. We're doing something new this year and going over to Michael's to play some wiffle ball on the field that he built. So I'm super excited about that. So, yeah, if you can make it Friday night, come play some wiffle ball. Over to you, Andy.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just a chance to commiserate with fellow Cubs fans, and it's going to be fun to hang out and talk Cubs, you know, this weekend as we have an exciting team to talk about. So in the past, it's been kind of drinking fuel to, you know, right, talk about the Cubs. But
in the past, we probably haven't talked much about the Cubs.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
The weekend, we're just hanging out.
You guys want to see how to tie a good knot? Yeah, no, it's a... It's, but I mean, now we, you know, we have cause for excitement and even, you know, merrymaking, I guess. So it should be good.
Yeah. And also at some point we will record an episode. So you're welcome to join us here in the studio, on the podcast. Well, not on, I mean, I don't know if we'll trust you with a microphone, but, we'll see. okay. So that's the weekend at the lake. Go to, IVNV.com/lake, and that's the Facebook invite thing for it. So the one thing,
did you take down the Junior Lake fan page holding that spot?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I transferred ownership of that to a Orioles podcast.
Okay.
But one thing is, even if you've talked with me maybe on the bus trip and said you think you were coming, please let me know, because really what we do, you know, the plans are kind of fluid throughout the weekend. And so, you know, maybe we go to Duffy's a little bit later or something like that. If somebody's like planning on meeting us at Duffy's, please let me know so that we get there on time and everything. So over the course of this week, just shoot me an email, Corey@IVNV.com. If this is something that interests you, you want more information on, or if you're definitely coming, just let me know. And that also helps me, you know how much food to buy and stuff like that. So, okay, one more thing here before we move on. We have our voicemail line, and people, I've asked that people call in with, like, you know, their takes on what's going on with the Cubs and stuff like that. So I got a voicemail. We got a voicemail this week, and I want to play it for you guys and see if you have an answer for it.
Hello. It's Michael. I wish you guys would get back with me and let me know what's going on. Michael was hoping to come over to your house this evening. I've been calling all day. Excuse me. I've called this morning, this afternoon, left you a message, get back in touch with me. And he always called me. I can't guess anymore. I'm sorry. I just can't guess anymore. If your life's more important than your son's life, I don't know what to tell you. But he's looking forward to coming to see you. No Bert, no you, no phone calls. I can't read your minds.
What? I have no idea.
He should come next weekend. Oh.
That's pretty bizarre. Was that Michael from Galesburg?
No, I have no idea. But didn't at the end, didn't he say no Bert?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. So if that's Bert's a listener, time. Like, that was a great prank call, because
And if it wasn't a prank call, I feel sorry for that person who just leaves messages when they don't know who it is. Like, when you get a random, like, no greeting message box, and you just go off.
No, but I think there is a message there. I'll have to call and find out, but I think I like, recorded, like, hey, this is IVMB. I don't know.
Even better.
Yeah. Okay, so...
Apparently we have illegitimate children out there we don't know about, too, so it's good to know, at least.
Our lives are more important than this podcast son's life. Okay, holy hell, these Cubs. This is so much fun. And today's loss kind of puts a little bit of a damper on it, but not really.
I mean,
Chris Sale pitched like a freaking animal.
Yeah, that was ridiculous.
And they still won the series. But, you know, and I remember early in the season, we said that at some point these young players were going to gel together and we talked about a July or August hot streak where they would reel off a bunch of wins in a row. And to be honest, like around the, you know, about the time of that Phillies series, I was thinking, yeah, I don't know if this team does have that in them. You know, I think they could maintain in a good record and hopefully get into the playoffs or be right there in contention for it. But I think for a while, I kind of doubted their ability to do what they've done here at the end of July and the beginning of August.
Oh yeah, there were definitely periods of doubt, but I always had faith, I think, that they were going to start to have complete performances where it seemed like every aspect of their game was working. And we've seen that quite frequently lately. So it's been super fun to see every phase working.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you just see how dangerous of a team it is when those things are working, because they're each individually, those pieces are so good and we just hadn't seen them all at the same time. And you get that many really good aspects of the game. Like I would say I think if you look at this team on paper, the only thing that like I think maybe has never looked great this season, and I don't think will really ever look great this season, is the defense. I mean, there's like glimpses of good defense, like Rizzo standing on a wall and falling into a crowd. You know, that's amazing. But like, if you look at the outfielder, Soler hasn't looked that good in the outfield. Schwarber, you know, he's just not going to be a gold glove left fielder. So.
And I've been, yeah, you're right about the defense. And, you know, I've also been just waiting for them just to pour on a bunch of runs, you know, and really get the offense going. And they have, you know, in the month of August, they've only scored less than four runs, like three times.
Yeah.
I'd say. They've been swinging the bats. The pitching's been there. It's just.
Well, and they just, you know, that lineup at different points, it just looks like murderer's row. I mean, it's just, it does not let up.
It's a heck of a simile. But yeah, man, how about that? Let's talk about the Rizzo standing on the tarp for a second since you brought it up. That game featured a walk-off win, a walk-off homer by Montero, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But the play that stood out in that game was that play by Rizzo, him making that catch and falling into the crowd and then whipping the ball back onto the field.
Yeah, when I first saw it, I didn't think it was a legitimate out. I thought they would, you know, there had to have been something illegal about what he did, but apparently not. That's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was incredible. We were recording while it happened.
Yeah, I think people enjoyed hearing your reaction.
Yeah, and you you were talking about Rizzo, and I won't repeat what I said when it happened, but it was amazing.
It's magic.
It was.
Yeah, I was talking with my mom tonight, and she was saying that she's kind of like it, and I think maybe we talked about this on an episode recently, but she was talking about how she's really kind of nervous about Rizzo, like the fact that he's getting hit by the pitch, you know, hit by pitches so much, and really playing like really aggressively, which we've talked about is like, I think, a good thing for this team to play like that. But when you don't have real backup for first base, a real backup, like it may, and when Rizzo is so instrumental in the success of this team and such a leader on the team, he's one player I would prefer that kind of plays it safe.
But don't you think that playing it safe changes every aspect
you're right.
of the game?
Yeah, you're right. But it's like, I do not want to see him get injured. I mean, that ball right there would have been very easy for him just to kind of like go up to the tarp and reach out. And it's awesome that he did it. I mean, as long as he doesn't get hurt, then it's awesome.
He's so important to the team. And even the fact that, like, a lot of these young guys, Madden is talking about, we need to give these guys days off. Like, I hate to, like, they need Rizzo in the lineup every day.
Yeah.
Even give him a day off. But gosh, yeah, he's so vital to the team, I think. Sorry, I derailed you there, Kurt. What were you going to say?
I don't even know. I just lost my train of thought. That's okay.
But so what? The last series that the Cubs lost was 3 weeks ago, 3 weekends ago, when they were swept by the Phillies. And that was probably the low point of the season as far as like our morale goes with this team. You know, like our, I guess, just where we're at emotionally with the team, that was the low point. But this is like these, it has just been a blast to watch this stuff. And so basically on this episode, we're going to talk about some of the things that we feel has led to this streak. But let's look at these 3 weeks. Are there any stats that really stand out to you guys? And I'm going to start off with this one, including this podcast episode. So this one and the previous two, so three episodes, we have one loss to talk about in three episodes. In four episodes, so this one and the previous three, there have been two losses.
Gee,
and keep in mind that at a few points in the history of this podcast, we've had episodes where the Cubs did not win once between our episodes, and that's when we were doing them once a week. Mm-hmm. And it, like, the weird thing is like in kind of preparing for this podcast, I almost feel like there's, when we didn't win anything, and I say we, when the Cubs did not win anything, it was almost like there was more to talk about. Like right now, it's just like, yep, they're really good. They're a lot of fun to watch. Like,
yeah, although I would say if they would have recorded this right after what, like yesterday's win or the day before, or the walk off or something, there's a certain level of giddiness that I just was bouncing off the walls. Today, I'm a little bit subdued given the loss today, and I'm just sort of maybe grounded a bit more, but. but yeah, at the same time, it's tough to, you can't wipe out how amazing the last couple weeks have been.
Well, I mean, just even like our scary stat, you know, segment was sort of based in negativity. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's like we grew so accustomed to looking for the problems. Mm-hmm. I don't think that we're as accustomed to looking for what's going right.
Yeah, you're right.
But I do, I mean, I have a stat. One of the stats that stood out to me is that, you know, we talked a lot about how the offense has been anemic before this stretch, and they really needed to turn it around. And so in the last 19 games, I'm going back to when the Philly series ended and they started winning. They've hit 25 home runs of their 112 on the season. So just in 19 games, they've hit 25 home runs, and that's 22% of their home runs.
That's crazy. Oh, and then,
yeah, 22% of the home runs in just like 11% of the season. So they've started doing what we thought they would do with power.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys were listening to the radio broadcast. I think it was a radio broadcast on Friday evening. They said that between the fifth inning of Thursday's game and the fifth inning of Friday's game, the Cubs hit 8 home runs.
That's sick. Yeah, the 3-1 inning was pretty incredible.
Yeah, and I think Coomer was on the mic for those three. And
the
first two
he blew.
He finally got a little bit worked up on the third one.
Do you think like Pat had to like pinch him like during the call to try to get him to...
like a cattle prod or something.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
And that one's not going to stay in the yard. Holy cow! The yard's not going to hold that one.
Oh, man. It seems like all the big stuff happens during Coomer's play-by-play.
It does. Yeah. The White Sox hit a home run today when he was calling it, and he said, he basically is saying, like trying to decide on air whether or not it was going to stay foul or go fair, or whatever, you know, stay fair or go foul. And then he says, and it's fair. Home run. I was like, what? Yep, I didn't know he hit that. It that far. Like, I'm picturing.
I thought it was a pop fly. It was
Baller. Yeah, I had no idea. It was like if it's, you know, that's where usually where you say, like, if it's fair, it's gone or something like that. Mm-hmm. Give me, I have to be able to visualize this thing.
Say deep right away, you know, I don't know.
Right.
Yeah. Well, at least since we're ripping on announcers, at least we don't have Hawk. And I had to watch today's game with Hawk because the local affiliate broadcast it over the air and they chose the WGN broadcast today. And it was on our main channel. So I watched Hawk and Stone and it, oh my gosh. Like, I just don't understand how the guy has a job. I think, I guess Sox fans like him, but I don't really understand why.
Well, that's the funny thing. So I listen to, and I think some of our listeners probably listen to Sonranto, you know, Danny. Danny's podcast on Friday, he released an episode with it's Danny and Michael from Colorado. I shouldn't shortchange Michael. they had on a White Sox podcaster, and the topic of Hawk came up, and my impression from that guy is that it's time to change the climate or just change the image of the White Sox, and that's where it starts. And he said there's been like a couple of, if I'm not mistaken, if I heard him right, he said that there's been a couple instances where Hawk is actually like not said anything for like entire half innings, like literally has not said anything, and that he's like left the booth. And and he said that like that Steve Stone doesn't even like really, like Hawk just says something absolutely ridiculous that Stone doesn't like really say anything, because then Harrelson will argue about it for like three innings. And so Stone just, like they said, he'll just kind of like chuckle it off, but he won't say anything. And so an example he gave was that like recently Hawk said that the Royals or that the White Sox are better, are actually a better team than the Royals. And and so they were like, he said Stone just kind of was like,
okay. I thought of a money-making idea for an app, and it's the Hawk Harrelson excuse machine. And like, you just put in the situation that just happened and it'll spit out a White Sox excuse for why it happened. Like, for example, today, when Rizzo got hit by the pitch, later Hawk said Rizzo hit himself with that pitch. Like, there's just like thing after thing where he's such a homer, makes up so many excuses. And then at the end of the ninth, they were showing the replay of Russell beating that throw, and he said, "Looks like he got him." And 5 seconds later, the umps are like, "Safe," and it took him no time to decide. He's just absolutely the worst. But I guess that's already known. We don't have to convince anyone here.
Yeah. Oh. Well, now Cubs fans have no excuse to listen to Hawk Harrelson for the rest of the season.
Thankfully.
Yep.
I gotta say, you know, even though we were a little bit down on Ron, I've been forced to listen to the radio broadcast like every single game the past 10 days or so. And I got to say, I've been enjoying it. I've been liking it. And I know you guys might not feel the same way about Pat and Ron, but I like
it. I don't mind him when they stick to their strengths, and Ron can do the color and Pat can do the play-by-play. But when they flip-flop those roles, it's when it gets ugly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, back to like some of the stats we were kind of going over. Another one is that, I can't remember. I think it was eight, but it was maybe nine. The Cubs had eight or nine games in a row of not letting the opposing pitcher finish the sixth inning. And that's really not something that you would expect from a very young team. Their patience at the plate in this winning streak has been really impressive and a lot of fun to watch. Like, they just force so many pitches. And really, like, I mean, Sale was no hitting the Cubs today till what, the sixth or
sounds right.
Seventh, somewhere in there. And like, he was, I think I saw on Twitter, somebody tweeted that he was on pace at that point for like 144 pitches. Like, he was not, I don't think he was going to finish when it's 96 degrees out. I don't think he was going to go the whole way. And that's so important, especially when facing a pitcher like Sale, is just see a ton of pitches and just get them out of there. And they were doing that. They were very effective with that during this hot streak.
Didn't they load the bases too, like in the seventh and sixth inning? Was that still on Sale?
Yeah, that was. And it was like a walk. Yeah. It was a hit, Fowler's hit, and then a walk, and then an and then Rizzo's hit by pitch, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Let me bring this up while we're talking about it. I kind of went through the pitchers that they faced in the last nine games. I kind of worry with the Cubs probably ending up with a wild card and having a one-game play-in situation. They're going to be facing the best pitcher on the other team. And it seems like they've really struggled when they face the ace of a staff. Like, you know, for example, going back to Hamels from Philly. Yeah. And then now Sale from the White Sox. And the nine-game winning streak, they beat Jose Quintana, Jeff Samardzija, Tyler Cravey, Matt Garza, Taylor Youngman, Jake Peavy, Matt Cain, Ryan Vogelsong, and Chris Heston. And that averages out to a 4.36 ERA. They're beating the pitchers they should, but it just feels like they're not necessarily performing super well against the best of the best.
Well, I think there's a couple
Giants series they missed Baumgartner, so they didn't have to face that.
I think there's a couple ways to look at that, though. I think all teams are going to struggle against an ace. Like I think any team would have had a hard time against Sale today. And another thing is that, as a lineup, many batters in this lineup, this is their first time seeing almost all of these pitchers.
Sure.
And so you might be able to hit a Youngman the first time, you know, it might be that third at bat. And we've seen a lot of that in this winning streak is they get really effective in the third time through the order. But, you know, with an ace, it might take a little bit longer. And so, honestly, it'd probably be good for the Cubs to see Garrett Cole or, you know, whoever, or Baumgartner, just to so that these players aren't seeing them for the first time in a wild card, in a one-game
playing. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's a good point.
So, I mean, even if they face Baumgartner in San Francisco here in a week or two, it'd probably be better for them to face him and struggle and lose that one game and have and be able to gain that experience and have tape and have, you know.
But even better to face him and actually have a little success against
him. Yeah.
Initially, ideally. Too, so they feel like they can be effective if they do end up facing him.
Yeah.
I do have a feeling if they face him in San Francisco, it's going to be rough like today was, because the power lefties, they don't seem to.
But don't you think if the Cubs faced the White Sox more often or faced Chris Sale, I think they would be better prepared. I mean,
I think so. But like you kind of just pointed out too, like I don't think any team hit Sale today. Like that was some of the nastiest stuff I've seen in a really long time.
Yeah.
Like
and then when the he needed to,
it was just kind of silly what he was able to do today. So yeah, I'm not too down on him for today's performance.
Yeah, I agree. So I guess some of the, you know, those are some of the specific things. Oh, how about one more individual player I'd like to talk about real quick is Dexter Fowler.
Yes, yeah.
So before today's game, I looked at the stats, and during this. From the first game after the Phillies series until yesterday, Fowler is hitting .290, .425, .565. He has 6 doubles, 2 triples, 3 home runs. He scored 16 times, and he's walking 18.5% of the time.
Yeah, like the past 7 days, he's like a .500 OBP. Remember that stretch, too, where he'd reach base safely like 20 games in a row,
right.
But he wasn't really hitting?
Yeah,
and so now he's added hitting to the mix too, and he's being the player that the Cubs need him to be.
Well, and he broke up the no hitter today. I mean, that was the only hit until the ninth inning.
Gee whiz.
So yeah, he's playing really well. So those are some of the specific things that I think have led to the hot streak that the Cubs are on. So let's kind of look at some of the overarching themes or some of the bigger picture things that have contributed to the streak. and really I think will be a theme here for the rest of the season. I'll jump in first if that's all right with you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. okay, this is something I've really been like itching to talk about because it just kind of like dawned on me, and this is probably like common sense to everyone else, but I haven't heard anybody talking about it. So I was kind of thinking, I was dry. Now that I'm back to work, I have 2 hours in the car every day. And so I was just driving, thinking about the Cubs. We've talked on these last few episodes about how the tone of this team has really changed with that Giants series. The tone of everything changed with that series. Madden made the move to bench Castro and change his role into more of a utility guy that plays second base when the matchups are right. And really Madden just entered like playoff mode. He's managing the team, especially the pitching staff, like you would expect him to manage the playoffs in the playoffs. And he's managing this team and he has them playing like every day, every inning, every at bat, every pitch is important. Like they're just, don't you guys sense that kind of like urgency that the team has right now? And it just feels obviously, I mean, they talk about it. He's managing like a playoff team. Anyways, okay, so I think there's examples you can point to all over the place that he's managing this like the playoffs. But this is what I really like about it. This is a very young team with very little experience, let alone postseason experience. So outside of Lester and Ross, there's not really any playoff experience. I think Montero and Fowler have each been to the playoffs once, and I believe with both it was really early in their careers. So virtually no playoff experience as a team. And so I think Madden is managing this team like they're in the playoffs because he wants the wins now. You know, I think they need the wins, and managing it that way led to a 4-game sweep of the Giants and really, you know, put some distance between them and the Giants. But, also, and along with, you know, to go along with needing the wins, I think that by managing this team like this for the last 2 months of the season, I think it's almost like an attempt to develop playoff-like experience for the team. And players play aggressively, you know, or right now they're playing aggressively like you need to in the playoffs. The pitching staff is starting to get used to being handled like they would in the playoffs. Pitchers are getting pulled a little bit earlier before they struggle, not after. Position players are kind of being moved around and used like they might be in the playoffs. And I think that this is an attempt to prepare this team for that so that if they get into the playoffs, sure, there's going to be pressure and attention that these guys have never seen before. But as far as things go, like on the field, I think they're going to be more comfortable with and more prepared for the strategy of postseason baseball. And I don't know. Do you think I'm like way off, or is this like just totally a given? I just hadn't heard anybody really talk about like, I think I've heard a lot of people talk about it, like as far as like, oh, needing the wins and stuff like that now. And then, but I was thinking, you know, really what he's doing is he's making a young, inexperienced team a little bit experienced.
No, I don't think that's off base. Do you, Kurt?
No, I don't at all. I do wonder if it's, because I haven't seen Madden in the past very much, but I wondered if it's just his style or if he's doing what you're suggesting and sort of trying to prepare the team or, you know, like where it's coming from. But I think what it obviously has done is it's not allowed any individual egos to take over the team or, you know, like, you know, we got a closer by committee. We've got, you know, quick hook on starters that aren't performing well, and we've got our long-term shortstop being pulled off, so, you know, and all these sort of things that are kind of big deal haven't been that big a deal. So I think, you know, he's doing a good job in that regard too, that this is preparing them to sort of say, hey, it doesn't matter who you are or what your ego is, this is how we're doing it. So yeah, I think it's twofold.
You might as well build a team first mentality into everybody now rather than all of a sudden, you know, in September.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't,
not that they didn't have that all along necessarily, but
well, and I think to go along with like you mentioned egos and stuff like that, you know, in the playoffs you're probably going to have a lot of substitutions. You're probably going to have a lot of pinch hitting and just everything. You know, the way that they use bullpens, it seems like they use bullpens like so heavily in playoffs. And they're getting all these players used to playing a couple different positions. And I think, I don't know, I just think it's kind of a really smart move to do with such a young team.
Yeah, a one-game playoff certainly makes for some weird situations, managerial decisions. You can use everybody and anybody.
Yeah, I would also like to point out that I thought that the one-game wild card play-in thing was stupid before the Cubs were potentially involved in it.
Yeah, I kind of do too, just because the fact that it's like you play 162 games and then, oh, you got one.
Right,
when game, and it's all about matchups.
Right, when in a season, it's all about series, and then you get to the playoffs, and it's one game. I think it's dumb. Andy, we talked on the last episode, I think, about where a listener asked, like, where would we see if the Cubs didn't get into the playoffs, or if they lost that one game, if in any way this season would be a failure.
You said Andy, but I think you meant Kurt, because it was me.
I know. I was kind of wondering what Andy's take on it was.
And I'm, okay, gotcha. Guess I'm almost positive you guys said no. I mean, there's no way you said yes, right?
We said it would just be a total failure, blow the thing up.
Yeah, trade everybody.
Whatever player you can blame it on is the one that they need to trade.
Because we don't have Edwin Jackson to blame it on anymore.
Right.
I think this season, I think we were going to be pretty happy with just them playing over 500. I don't think.
Yeah. Yep.
I think making the playoffs is slightly better than our realistic expectations were earlier in the season.
Yeah, because we said their ceiling was a wild card. Which it, right. I guess it kind of is, but we also didn't know that the Cardinals were just going to be like, you know,
right. We didn't know that like potential
witchcraft and stuff.
Right. We didn't know that the Cubs like could.
And have the fourth best record in baseball.
Right. I mean, the Cardinals like are on pace to win what, like 104 games. Like literally, the Cubs or the Pirates could win 101 games and get the play.
Wild card.
Yeah, get a wild card.
That's ridiculous.
Okay, before we move on to listener questions, you guys kind of jump in. Obviously, I'm sure listeners are able to tell that this was a little bit more of a fly by the seat of our pants episode. But I wanted to briefly bring up Pedro Strop's reaction during Friday's game. I'm sure anyone listening to this podcast, you saw it. You saw the video or you heard what happened, but it was a pressure-filled eighth inning. Alexi Ramirez was taking a big lead off second, and I think he represented the tying run, and he took a big lead, and Strope stepped off and looked him back to the bag. And then on his way back, Ramirez was wagging his fingers and shaking his head. And then Strope struck someone out. I don't remember who it was, and double fist pumped in a pretty demonstrative way. Maybe directed at Ramirez, maybe the White Sox dugout, maybe nobody in particular, maybe his deceased relatives. I don't really know who it was directed towards.
Bob Costas.
Right. But this is kind of the you know, new baseball versus old baseball discussion. And I think the three of us were kind of in this weird age bracket where we're right in between new and old baseball. I think we grew up with old baseball, and as fans of an old generation with history, good history or not, in playing in the second oldest ballpark in baseball, I think Cubs fans lean toward being traditionalists, but I'm curious what you guys thought of Strope's reaction.
And just because we grew up, you know, kind of during the old baseball era still, I think we have every right to be grumpy about stuff like this, about new baseball stuff.
Are you grumpy about it?
Yeah, sometimes. I don't care.
I don't know. I've started just embracing it. Like the bat flips and.
Yeah, I'm kind of getting to be like you, Corey, where like.
But Kurt, you're like the most, like, you're the curmudgeon of the group.
I know, and I've totally flip-flopped. I have no problem with what Strope did, only because it's not like he's doing it all the time. And given the weight of the situation and there's a little bit of tension, I have zero issues with what he did. So I'm not going to be a curmudgeon on this one. I think if a guy goes out there and he's doing it all the time on every strikeout, yeah, that's a lot of, you know, out of line. But in this situation, I have no issue. And again, I've come a long way since my curmudgeon days of probably 3 or 4 years ago.
Well, Corey, how about this? Like, if you were watching college football and a guy made a pretty amazing tackle or got a sack and celebrated, you would not be a big fan of it, generally speaking.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
But see, I would say there are things like there are plays you're supposed to make. There are plays you're paid to make. And there are plays like in high pressure situations. Like, you know, in football, if you throw
one sack a game, it's not.
No, okay.
Their entire job.
Well, okay, no, but here's where I think you're right, Kurt. I think that if that was. Okay, my problem with college football is that now people do it after an incomplete pass that the receiver dropped, and then the defensive backs have to celebrate.
Yeah, like celebrate.
That's the stuff that annoys me. That's the stuff, like, you're right, Kurt. Like, doing the things you're supposed to do, that's one thing. But let's say it's, you know, fourth and one or fourth and goal from the 1 yard line, and it's 3 seconds left, and a linebacker sacks, you know, whatever, tackles the running back in the backfield, then I would expect that sort of celebration. And that's kind of what Strope's was. Well,
but isn't Strope's job to get out of that inning without giving up any runs?
Yeah.
He's just doing his job.
You're just trying to push my buttons.
Yeah.
We can move on. It's okay.
I don't know. I don't want to move on.
No, I'm all for the... I'm drinking my coffee.
I'm on the
new baseball train.
Yeah, I've definitely softened my stance. I think, you know, this team is hot. I think it was like a really big moment. And Alexi Ramirez, I think, kind of added to the tension. I think if Ramirez didn't do that, maybe Strope wouldn't have had that reaction. But, I mean, it took a lot for him to get out of that inning. But I don't know, man. Baseball is fun. And it's fun to watch. And I'm fine with players having fun while doing it. And I don't know. Isn't that a job you would want where you can have fun and make millions of dollars?
Oh, man.
I do want that job.
But we used to get annoyed with like Jose Valverde and players like that. Mm-hmm. And some of that, I think some of, like you said, Kurt, some of those, the stuff that closers do, it feels contrived and it's fake.
Brian
it feels
Wilson, fake. Anyone?
Right, right. But that was a huge moment for Strope. It was a huge moment for the team, and I had no problem with him getting fired up. And plus, it's a series with the White Sox. Let's have a little drama, a little stepping on toes. You know, fist pumping is a lot better than throwing a bottle of beer from the stands at a rookie left fielder.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Go White Sox.
I just don't like a lot of like deliberately trying to show up the other team. I think, like, yeah, celebrate your successes, but I think you just got to be careful not to cross the line into just deliberately trying to sort of mock the performance of the other team or something like that.
I'm sorry. I couldn't pay attention to anything you're saying because your father-in-law just walked through in his underwear.
Okay, I have a story about that. I'll tell you guys shortly.
Oh, man. I'm sorry.
Oh. He at least had shorts on.
Oh, my gosh. Oh. I want a fist pump after that one.
I had to mute the pick.
Yeah, I need to turn off the camera.
Oh, gosh. One of my favorite moments in the history of the podcast right there.
Dude, only would have scratched himself.
Okay. Please tell me you're going to edit that part out. I don't know. Can you do that in the video?
It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad.
No, it looks, he looks like he's wearing shorts.
Oh, jeez.
Wow. That just happened.
Oh, how can I? Oh, I just want to play the outro music right now.
I honestly have no idea what we were talking about.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't. Sometimes newspapers got to get recycled, man. Oh my gosh, I have a headache. I laughed so hard I have a headache. All right. So I asked for these on Facebook on Sunday mornings. You can go to ivmv.com/Facebook and like our page. Some of these were emailed in as well. And you can email me your questions throughout the week, Corey, C-O-R-E-Y, at ivmv.com. So this first one comes from Jeff, and he said, with how well Grimm has pitched this year, would you consider trying to stretch him out in the spring and have him compete for a starting job?
I kind of foresee him being a closer in the future. Well, I don't know his injury history well enough to know if that durability is a huge concern. I know he was injured in maybe 2018 for quite a while with a forearm injury.
Yeah, I really like him out of the bullpen. And to me, I think that the team has plenty of options for the rotation, especially to start next season. And I think when he's pitching this well out of the bullpen, I'm not sure you move him out to make a, you know, maybe the fifth starter spot when you have plenty of other options. And I think that those are, I just think he's doing really well. And if you need a fourth or fifth starter, I think you can find it somewhere else and still keep his consistency with what he's shown so far, I guess, in the bullpen.
But he, I mean, that being said, he does have like a starting pitcher's repertoire, kind of.
Yeah.
Fastball, slider, or curveball, a little bit of slider.
I like him in the bullpen.
Yeah, I would agree with that. He's so good in the bullpen, it'd be hard to see him make that transition and not be as valuable as a starter.
Yeah. Danny Rocket, from the previously mentioned Danny from the San Ranto podcast. He asked how we're feeling and if we still have colds. I still have a cold.
I'm just getting over mine. Yeah. So thanks. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, asking. Dan.
I kind of feel him coming on.
He sat right next to me at the game, so if I'm surprised he doesn't have it.
Right.
With all the making out that was going on.
I know. I touched his scorecard.
Next thing you know.
Jason from New Mexico says that, or he asks, now that Bryant and Schwarber are up, are there any players drafted those years that you would rather have? So in 2013, Bryant was picked with the second pick by the Cubs, and the only player drafted ahead of him was Mark Appel by the Astros. So did you guys look through that list? Anybody on that list you would rather have?
No.
No way.
No way.
No.
Yeah, a lot of the pitchers from that draft have not panned out.
2014 yet. Is a little bit of a different story, but still it's Kyle Schwarber.
Right, so Schwarber was picked number 4. When I was looking over that list, I just thought, you know what? It's too early to tell. It was just over a year ago. Very few players on that list have made it to the big leagues yet.
But that being said, we have seen Carlos Rodon for the White Sox, and he's looked like he's going to have a good career and he has good stuff. Aaron Nola for the Phillies pitched well against the Cubs, was also in that draft. So we're starting to see some of those guys get to the big leagues and have some success, but Kyle Schwarber.
Yeah, I mean, that's the long-term value of some of those pitchers is probably could be greater than Schwarber, but given the Cubs' timeline and the fact that Schwarber was like under slot at 4 and outperforming slot, it just, kind of crazy how good he's been.
Yeah, and the Cubs just have to be happy with how Schwarber's playing, and I just think it's great to see him impacting the big league team the way that he has, just a year after being drafted.
That's so crazy.
Nick from Wisconsin, he says, biggest contributor to the recent successes, team gelling, Castro out of everyday starting lineup, the young guys getting comfortable, or something else?
I do think it's a combination of things. I think it's what we talked about, is, you know, all of the parts being good at the same time. So I guess I'd go with his team gelling option. You know, pitching's been good. The offense has come back. The bullpen's been pretty great.
Right.
You know, you get all that at the same time, you're going to win a lot of games.
I don't think it's so much getting Castro out of the everyday starting lineup. I think it's more of getting Schwarber in the everyday starting lineup. And I don't think Castro being moved off shortstop and being on the bench and playing second base, I don't think that's what's led to this winning streak. But really, I think, to be honest, I think it's the team gelling, the young guys getting comfortable, and then I think it's just also the way that Maddon is managing right now. I honestly think that's the biggest reason for the, you know, how they've been playing lately. Anything else to add there, guys?
No.
Christopher says, talk about the pros and cons of trading to get Utley. I personally don't think they should trade to get him, but I'm curious to hear what you guys think. And then also Chris asked, would Chase Utley be a good addition, or do you think it would mess with the team's chemistry?
I think it would, just for the reason we just mentioned, is the team seems like it's starting to gel, as Nick said, and to throw somebody in there with a lot of, you know, who's had a long-term career and has done things a certain way probably for a long time, to come into a new group like this that it seems to really be coming together and playing as quite a unit, I think it's not the right move.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Just, I don't really know anything about Chase Utley personally, or what kind of like clubhouse guy he is or whatever, but
right.
Philadelphia has had issues with Sandberg there and a lot of veteran players. They didn't get along. I don't know if he had anything to do with that, but given what, you know, the young team, the gelling, and I love the veterans that they do have. I had not nice things to say about David Ross early, but like, he's older, but he's a total nut, and I love that because he totally works with the young guys. So, you know, I like the older veterans they have, and it seems a bit risky to bring in another old guy.
Well,
that might risk changing that.
I think when it comes to like his clubhouse persona or whatever, I think I trust this front office, and I think that if they bring him in, I think it's as much to do with bringing in an experienced player that they think would work with this group of kids. I think it's just as much about that as it would be what he might do on the field. And so I think if they bring him over, I think that's part of the reason they would probably do it. But like you said, Kurt, I don't pay attention to, you know, what's going on in the Phillies clubhouse, or I don't know much about him as far as
one thing worth considering is like he has played first base some in his career, and especially recently, just because it seems like the Phillies are trying to shop versatility a little bit. So like if Rizzo needed a, you know, somebody to back him up, that would be a pretty darn good option. And then also he hits lefty, so he and Castro could platoon at second, and that could be kind of effective. But I mean, with LaStella on the mend, you know, and then, you know, through Javier Baez in the mix, perhaps somewhere,
right?
It's kind of hard to see where all that would work.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to get him. But if they do, I think it's because they think he's going to improve this team when it comes to, you know, just maybe what he can bring to the clubhouse and bring to the the experience that he might bring.
Yeah.
Scott says, regardless of what happens the rest of the way, it's so much fun watching this team. It's been a long time coming. What's your prediction for their record now? 90 plus wins seems realistic for sure. I don't know. I would guess I would guess like 89 wins or 90. I think they'll be right around in there.
Yeah, I'd still probably go 88, 89. Just because I don't know. I won't say why. I'm just going to stick with 88 or 89.
Yeah, I'm not really too concerned if their win total doesn't really concern me that much because the Cardinals are going to have more, most likely. And I think my goal right now, like what I would like to see, is to see them get into the playoffs and be able to do it with like a couple of game cushion so that they can set the rotation up how they want it heading into the playoffs. So, I mean, win total doesn't really matter to me too much, but I think it's going to be around in there.
But I agree that 90 is realistic.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they have 47 games left to play, I think, something like that. So to reach 90, they need to win 23 of the 47?
Yeah.
That seems very doable.
Well, yeah, that's under 500, obviously. So.
Right, yep.
Well, maybe 90. Maybe I should change.
So now prediction. That you guys said 89, let me go ahead and say I think they're going to break 90.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
But like I said,
I didn't know we had to do math to figure this
right.
out.
You old sticks in the mud.
I was just shooting from the hip. If they win 90, I'll do double fist pumps all day.
Matthew says, will we lose any more games this year?
47-0, baby.
and the Cardinals will still finish one game ahead. Tim says, Castro has handled everything like a pro. Do they keep him around long term?
Probably not.
No, but he has handled this really well. And I think that also speaks to Joe Maddon's abilities.
I think he'll be on the table, you know, for trading in the near future.
Yep.
Yeah.
Jeremy says, does the closed captioning on anyone else's TV call Schwarber squasher? mine did tonight, and I don't hate it.
Me neither.
I just want to know why he's watching the game with the closed captioning on.
I think closed captioning can be highly entertaining sometimes.
Yeah.
If it was in a squasher, yeah, I might need to put it on a little more often.
I always watch An Idiot Abroad with closed captioning.
Jason in Korea, he says, despite how well the Cubs are playing, as a Cubs fan, I'm predisposed to think about next year. I'm going to assume Javi Baez gets the September call-up and continues to play well defensively. Castro has taken to second base like a natural. If they both struggle offensively the rest of the season, what do you do with them in the off season? I think the proven player, I keep the proven player in Shop Baez. Castro has proven he can hit in the majors, and despite his strikeout totals, I actually think Baez will get a larger return just on potential alone. Thoughts?
That's a tough one.
Well,
because we've defended Castro a lot, but it gets harder and harder.
It's above our pay grade.
Yeah. Right. Well, I think to start off, I don't think you can judge Baez on a month in the big leagues at the end of this season. I don't think that's fair to him. But what do you guys think about trade value goes? Do you think that... So Jason says he thinks that Baez would actually have more trade value than Castro.
But maybe that's just because Castro's is so low right now.
Yeah. I would guess they're probably pretty similar in value, but certainly Baez has the higher ceiling, and I guess I don't know what that translates to in trade prospects, but.
Well,
yeah, I just get the impression that the front office doesn't love either of these guys.
Right. I think Castro should still have more value than Baez. I mean, organizations have scouts and people that are smart enough to know what's going on with Baez right now and maybe how he has and hasn't improved. But I think baseball wide, I think the Baez reputation is what we saw last year. And sure, there's lots of potential, but he has a wild and uncontrolled swing and a ton of strikeouts. And so I think until he can prove at the major league level that he is maybe not a 300 hitter, but if he can hit 270 or 265, you know, and have that same power and draw some walks, I think that improves his value a lot. But I think as of right now, I think people are teams would just kind of look at 2014 and think, yeah, no thanks. Or it's worth a risk, but not, I don't think the Cubs would get that great of a return. Where I think with Castro, there'd probably be hitting coaches and stuff like that that would look at him and think, yeah, I think I can fix this guy. And, you know, he's, look at what he's done in the past. So I still think Castro has a higher trade value.
Maybe, but you know, guy, anybody who's interested is going to try to get him for a steal, given his recent performance.
Right.
Oh, and yeah. The fact that he seems to be like an every other year performer. And so people will lowball the offer.
Yeah. Justin says, it seems to me, unscientifically and with a small sample size, he asked me to play the song, but my iPad is dead right now. So
yes.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Justin. It hurts me as much as it hurts you. So he said, it seems to me, unscientifically and with a small sample size, that the Cubs have been able to beat the teams they are supposed to beat this year, sub 500 teams. What day in late August or early September will they pull ahead of the Pirates?
I actually think that's the opposite had been true previously. They were playing better against, because I think I did a scary stat on it, but they've been playing better against the good teams minus the Cardinals and poorly against the sub 500 teams. But I think recently they seem to be switching that.
So do you think that, do you have a date that you think maybe in they will pull ahead of the Pirates?
Boy, it's tough because they've been the best team in baseball, and they're still two and a half or three behind the Pirates.
It's so crazy.
Cubs playing really well too. They're like 8-2 in the last 10. So
right, look at how well the Cubs have played, and they've like basically made up no ground on the Cardinals or the Pirates, really.
Yeah. Well, they have They play the Cardinals a bunch in September, actually, and then they play the Pirates 6 games in September also. So I think a lot of it will shake out more in September.
Yeah, I think if the Cubs do pull ahead of the Pirates, I think it'll be when they're playing head-to-head.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I think the Pirates probably hold on to that first wild card spot.
But the schedule surrounding all the Pirates and Cardinals games looks pretty forgiving for the Cubs, but still, yeah, it's going to be these teams playing each other that'll really give everything some shape.
Yeah. Kent asks, here's a meathead question. Who's having a better rookie season, the Schwarber or Bryant?
Well, I mean, Schwarber in his smaller, shorter season.
That's what's kind of hard to compare. Yeah.
I think that, but I don't know that Schwarber's been up long enough to be considered in the argument. I guess if you put it to rookie of the year, maybe. I don't think Schwarber's eligible. I mean, he's eligible, but at least not in my mind.
Schwarber's only played 33 games.
Right. Yeah.
It's been an incredible 33 games, but a lot of guys get hot for, 40 games.
I think if you're
34, tomorrow's the last day of him.
Being 30 or 40 is it?
Okay. I thought you were like, well, tomorrow's usually the end of, that's when the book is written on these new players.
Nobody stays hot longer than 34 games. Let it be known.
Whereas Bryant has played 106 games this season.
Yeah. Yeah, so Bryant's been through the, like, seeing pitchers multiple times, you know, a little bit more of a book on him
right.
for other pitchers, which I think makes things harder for a rookie, so.
But I think if you're just going off numbers, you have to say Schwarber's having
yeah.
a better
rookie. Schwarber's been incredible. And I will say, too, like, just, you know, for a guy that young who's not played a full major league season to put together at-bats and have the patience and be able to hit the ball like he does is... It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, like he was literally playing in the Big Ten last year.
Not the best baseball conference.
Wow, right. Guys, I just noticed that Chris Bryant leads the National League in strikeouts in 2015.
Well, thanks for thanks for that, Andy.
But I mean, his season's been good. There's no doubt.
Well, it would have been Soler had he not got hurt. So you know.
But he also is seventh in the National League in walks. So
yeah, yeah. I mean, I think they're just uneven as far as like how you're measuring them. But I think you have to say Schwarber. Just I don't know. You don't have to, I suppose. But I mean, you look at you can't do much more than what he's done. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. So. But
yeah, he got a beer thrown at him, which
right.
Brian has not.
Right, you're right. Happen. I mean, I think yeah, we'll see what the numbers look like in September, I guess. Bob says Madden has made some tough decisions this year. Do you think Ricky Renteria would have made the call to bench and switch Castro to second?
Wow, that's a good question.
I think so because I think that the powers above him would have told him what to do.
So in this case, though, do you think it was Madden's call? Or do you think it was their call?
I think maybe Renteria would have let it go on longer, forcing the front office to tell him what's up.
I think it was probably a joint decision, but I don't think it was like the front office saying this is what's going to happen. I think it's probably more of just everybody being on the same page and probably understanding that's what needs to happen. But I don't know. Do you see Dale Swaim making that move? Or I don't really see either of those two guys doing it until their hand is forced, I guess.
I guess I could see
Dale Swaim gives him hell, though.
Yeah, because he was...
I don't know. It just seems like... I think players respond better to the way Madden handles these things. You know, I think because he is so like experimental, I think it goes over better with players because it's seen as, yeah, let's try this. And I don't know. Don't you get that impression?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, the fact that like he did, like think about how he moved Castro, an all-star shortstop off of shortstop, and it wasn't really a big deal. Like, it wasn't a big deal in the media. I mean, it was mentioned because that was a story they could write about or whatever, but it wasn't like a huge issue or a real like hot take topic, you know? I don't think Renteria would have done it, but all right. Well, thanks to everybody that sent in those questions. And Kurt, do you have a scary stat of the week for us?
I do, and unfortunately, it's back to the bad.
How could you go bad after a 9-game winning streak?
You know, we've given them enough love. You know, you got to have a little tough love once in a while.
Good Lord!
Well, you watched? Didn't you watch today's game?
I did.
You
mean,
how could I?
Okay. All right.
It's pretty simple, straightforward one. The Cubs struck out 18 times in one game today, and 15 of those came to Chris Sale. So there's your scary stat of the week. I haven't had a negative one for a really long time. So, and it's supposed to be negative, right?
It can't all be sunshine.
No. That's right. Every once in a while, they're going to lose. and Kurt's going to jump all over it.
Yeah, every once in a while they're going to strike out 18 times in one game.
How many times would you have struck out in that game, Kurt?
None, because I would have not played.
27.
All right. Do you guys have any internet muscle flexes?
I don't.
Nope.
Okay, I have a couple. The first one is from today, and Miguel Montero tweeted after today's game, and I'll read it as he wrote it. It says, "I have to be honest, we have not chanced today with Sale. He's was from another planet today. It's okay, we have to lose sometime. Hashtag we are good." Somebody responded with two tweets in a row. The first one says, "At MiggyMont26, you suck today." And then he followed up with, "I still love you, though. Don't worry."
Tough love on Twitter.
You suck.
Yeah. Okay, so here's another one. I love this one. My mom sent this one to me earlier in the week. I believe it's from the Bleacher Nation Facebook page. And this commenter says, "The Cubs need a new closer. Send Rondon packing tomorrow and lock Madden out of Wrigley Field tomorrow. He may need to be the next guy replaced. Cubs are doing great, but I'm not sure of giving the credit to Madden."
Oh, no.
Then there's a comment underneath that that says, "Have a feeling this post might end up on the IVMB podcast."
It's prophetic.
Yep.
Yeah. And Corey was just giving a lot of love to Madden, and then he throws in a flex hating on Madden. So I think Corey's a Madden lover.
I just think it's amazing. Like in the middle of this winning streak, this guy's like, "Cubs are doing great, but I'm not sure about giving the credit to Madden. I don't know. He may need to be the next guy replaced." So that does it for this episode. The weekend at the lake is this upcoming weekend. We would like to hang out, so come hang out with us. We'll show you a good time. We'll play wiffle ball. We're going to talk about the Cubs a lot. We're going to drink old style at Duffy's. We'll have fun around the campfire. Overall, just a good time. Go to ivmb.com/lake and let us know if you're coming. This episode was brought to you by all of our Patreon contributors. A special thanks to the Hall of Fame level contributors: Jeremy, Dave, Dizzle, David, Jeremy, Chad, Todd, Dallas, Charles, Stephen, Stewart, Guy, Peter, Jeff, Jane, Shane, Michael, John, Andrew, Craig, and Rick, and Luke. Our associate producers are Matthew Macer, Anthony Hutfels, Joshua Hansen, Ryan Shores, Brian Hunt, Tim Marr, Jason from New Mexico, and the Quad Cities own Jason Nunn. We would like to thank Matt Brown from Hawaii for joining the Patreon campaign. I believe Matt is our first contributor from Hawaii. Our Patreon campaign is how we pay the podcasting bills, and it's how we fund improvements to this podcast. You can join the 90 contributors by going to patreon.com/IVMB. Pledging levels start as low as $1 a month, and the perks get better as you go up in the levels. Again, it's patreon.com/IVMB. That's patreon.com/IVMB. So we will be back on Wednesday with another episode. And unless something happens that's big between now and then, we have something different planned for you on the midweek episode. Thank you for listening. And until Wednesday night, go Cubs.